Yes. Thank you very much. Thanks, Sabrina, for organizing this, and thanks for having me here. And it's very nice that I can stay here for 4 weeks, actually, together with many members of our team from Würzburg, and I will introduce them in a second. So Würzburg is a small, well, medium-sized university town. Well, it's a big university, but a small town in the north of Bavaria, and has this very nice castle from our previous bishop. And so the talk is going to be about wormholes and factorization in ADS-CFT. So, and in particular, I'm going to talk about Berry phases. And so I'll first define what Berry phases are in quantum mechanics and show you some examples, but then I'm going to explain in what sense they're relevant for wormholes and ADS-CFT, and in particular, the gravity dual of two-dimensional CFTs. There's some algebra in this, and actually there's a very nice relation to this recent work on von Neumann algebras, which you may have heard about by Witten and Neuthäuser and Liu and Witten and collaborators. There was just a paper 2 days ago, so there's actually a connection there also, which I'm going to explain. Okay, first for some motivation. So we're going to look at wormholes in the context of ADS-CFT and in first quite low dimensions. And so as is already known for some time following the work of these people and many others, wormholes provide a relation between entanglement and geometry in ADS-CFT. I'm going to review this slightly in the subsequent. And our work's based to some extent on some very nice papers by Hermann Verlinde, who showed that the concept of wormhole is also present in simple quantum mechanics. And so this will play an important role in, for the Berry phase. And so the Berry phase provides a geometrical understanding of how degrees of freedom entangle. And so that's what I want to show in this talk. And so there will be a relation to the so-called factorization puzzle, which I also briefly review. And so we have one set of ideas that work for quantum mechanical systems and ADS-2 spaces, JT gravity, but also we have some results for ADS-3, CFT-2. Okay, so, and in fact, this talk will be based on these two papers. So the first one will be about this paper, Berry phase in quantum mechanics and wormholes, which is actually written together with some colleagues in condensed matter physics. So because we have this joint grant between Würzburg and Dresden, where there's a collaboration between people like us and condensed matter physics. And so it was very nice to get our colleagues involved in that context as well. So I'm going to mention a little bit how these ideas also reflect in this other area. And then I'll explain quite in some detail this work on the Berry phase in ADS-3 CFT2. And so that's written with Shovik Banerjee, Moritz Dorband, Andy Meyer, and Annalena Weigel. And three of these people are actually sitting here. So there's Annalena, Moritz, and René. So, and they're visiting this week. So, and they would also be very happy to talk to you about these things. And I should say, so Shovik was also supposed to come, but unfortunately for family reasons, he had to cancel his visit, which is quite sad. Anyway, so that's the papers I'm going to talk about in this talk. Okay, so part one is about just reviewing black holes and wormholes in ADS-CFT and the factorization puzzle. So the entire story that we're going to talk about is about considering eternal ADS black holes, and I'm sure everybody has seen similar pictures already before. So we have global ADS space, and we use Kruskal coordinates and consider non-traversable wormholes that arise in this eternal black hole geometry. So essentially here we have a CFT on the right-hand side, or a quantum mechanical system on the right-hand side, and there's another one on the left-hand side. And so time actually goes up on one side and down on the other. And then there's a black hole horizon. And so you can consider wormholes as being structures that link the two boundaries. So already here we note an important feature that there is a singularity in the time gründet. And so if you have these two sides, it means that the timeline killing vector will switch fine up the horizon, and there will be a discontinuity, and this plays an important role in this entire talk that I'm going to show to you. Okay, so as it was proposed by Malasina already quite some time ago, an eternal black hole in AdS spacetime is dual to two copies of the boundary CFT, and the two theories are entangled in the thermofield double state. So I'm sure most people are familiar with this, but let me just say that the TFD state, so the thermofield double state, is the purification of a thermostate of one CFT. Okay, so we have bases of states on the right and the left, and so then they are combined in such a way in the state. And it's done in such a way that if I take trace over one of those two sides, I get a thermal density matrix in the other. Okay, another very important result is the one proposed by Van Ramsdonk and also Malasina and Susskind, which is this famous ER is equal to EPR proposal, which provides a very strong relation between entanglement and geometry in the setting. So EPR stands for Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen entanglement. So there's these famous experiments with two photons that are emitted from some decay and are maximally entangled. And so the Einstein-Rosen bridge is actually the concept of a wormhole. And so this EPR proposal in the context of ADS-CFT states that two entangled CFTs with EPR correlation are connected through a wormhole, which is then an Einstein-Rosen bridge. So this is the content of this famous proposal. And that leads directly to the so-called factorization puzzle, briefly reviewed here. So if you have two CFTs outside the context of ADS-CFT, and so they have disjoint Hilbert spaces because there's no interaction between them. And then you would just have the total Hilbert space would just be a product of the two Hilbert spaces of the theory on the left and the right. Okay. On the other hand, if you have a wormhole, then of course there's a Hilbert space. Of course, we don't know what quantum gravity is, but in principle there will be a Hilbert space which describes the entire quantum gravity system here. And that, of course, will not factorize because it just describes one system. Okay. And so there seems to be a contradiction, which is this puzzle that so the two CFTs, if they don't know of each other, they should have a factorized Hilbert space, but the gravity dual Hilbert space doesn't factorize. Okay, and the one upshot of the talk that I'm going to give is that we can use particular geometrical concepts such as the Berry phase and also particular holonomies to make this very precise and then also to see where this interaction between the CFTs comes from. Okay. So at least there's a way of formulating this puzzle in a much more concise way. Okay, so let me start with briefly reviewing this paper by Hermann Ferdinand, who considered wormholes in quantum mechanics, and that will already introduce some of the major concepts that we're going to talk about. So consider a thermal partition function for a quantum mechanical system given by some Hamiltonian, which you see here. And then you can show on general grounds that you can write the partition function as an integral over a particular integration space, a so-called disk, which as its boundary has a thermal circle. So you know if you have finite temperature, it means you compactify the time direction in a circle. And there will be another integration direction. And the reason comes from the fact that in general, if you describe your system, you introduce generalized coordinates and momenta, x, and there will be a symplectic form on the phase space of this quantum mechanical system. And so the symplectic form you then write in these generalized coordinates and momenta in the following form. And if you have this very general structure, then this is actually the partition function that you have to calculate. So in this path integral form. Now, if the symplectic form that you have is exact, which means that you can write it as an exterior derivative of some other form, then you can use Stokes' theorem, which is written here, and you can turn this integral over the entire space into an integral over the boundary. And then, of course, this partition reduces to the original one that you started with. And however, then you see that if you calculate a correlation function of n of these partition functions, then in general, if the symplectic form is not exact, you will get an integration region which has this wormhole structure. So this is for four, for instance, then you get a wormhole with four n's. So that's just by looking at integration regions in quantum mechanics. But then you get a geometrical structure that really is reminiscent of a wormhole. Okay, so now where does the very case come into this game? So first I'm going to show you a toy model, okay, which has nothing to do with ADS-CFT, but will explain what we are after. So, and I'll show you a very fast one interacting two-qubit system in quantum mechanics. And so the upshot will be that we will find that states which have the same entanglement, meaning they have the same entanglement entropy, may still have a different Berry phase. And so this Berry phase has more information than the entanglement entropy. Maybe already here you can see, if for those people who know about these von Neumann algebras, you can see a slight relation there, which I will come to later again. So mathematically, this fact is actually described precisely by such a non-exact symplectic form as I just introduced on the previous slide. Okay, and actually, this non-exact symplectic form will be at the origin of this non-factorization of the wormhole. And so the true gravity, quantum gravity wormholes share this mathematical structure, which is already present in this very simple quantum mechanical model. Okay, and in view of collaborating with condensed matter physicists, it's a little bit of a fun fact, but still it's nice to realize that actually this property of same entanglement, different Berry phase, that may actually be realized experimentally, or at least in our paper we have some suggestions how to consider this in experiment. I very briefly will mention this. All right, so maybe quickly, what is a Berry phase? So there's this very nice review of this in the lectures by David Tong on the quantum Hall effect. So again, just for quantum mechanics, consider a time-dependent Schrodinger equation, which has a particular ground state that you can describe as the unitary time evolution of some basis, which depends on some sets of parameter lambda. And then you can define, if you have several of these parameter lambdas, you can define a Berry connection, which looks like this. So n again is this basis. And so you see, I mean, the different components come from these different parameters, and then just inserting this into, or using the Schrodinger equation, you get this relation for these, for this unitary time evolution. And so then the Berry phase is given by this expression here, where you integrate around a closed loop over this this connection. Okay, so in a very simple example without any entanglement, if you just have a single spin, then actually you will see that this will lead to a contour in not in real space, but in the space spanned by the magnetic field. So if you have just one particle with one and a half particle in the magnetic field, and in fact, you can, so the magnetic field will be, in this space, you will have a particular structure that looks like this, and the singularity here already hints to this non-exact symplectic form that will show up. Okay, so in this paper with our colleagues from condensed matter, we now showed that how to obtain this non-factorization that is also present in the black hole case, how we actually see this in a very simple model in quantum mechanics. So, and in this very simple model contains two coupled spins in an external magnetic field. Okay, so we have two spin operators, S1 and S2, and We make it super simple. It will just be 2½ particles, okay, for now. And so they interact with each other with a coupling spring J. And then one of them is considered to be in a magnetic field. So that's a model which will, for instance, describe the electronic Zeeman interaction in the hydrogen atom. And so just to make our life simple, we just consider the fact that the magnetic field is just interacting with one of the two spins. Okay, so then here you have a Hamilton operator. So the important point is that there's an interaction between the two spins. Okay, so that's why the Hilbert space is not going to factorize. But in some sense, I should warn you right here that here I'm putting this in by hand. You know, I'm just saying I want at least two spins interact. Okay, so I would kind of force so in the ADS-CFT picture the two CFTs on the two sides to interact with each other. Okay, and now, so we will calculate the entanglement entropy. So we will first calculate the ground state by solving the Schrödinger equation for this very simple model. And then we will consider or calculate the entanglement entropy. So we have two systems, spin one and spin two. So tracing over the one spin gives us the entanglement entropy for the other. Okay. And then we will consider unitary transformations that leave the entanglement entropy invariant. And so, and then you can actually show that they will be of this particular form, where U1 is a transformation that acts only on the first of the two spins, and U2 will be a transformation that acts on the second of the two spins. And now, because of this SU2 structure, we have actually two patches for the top and the bottom of the sphere. Okay, so there's a minus sign here. And so these are the operators of spin one in the Z and Y directions. Okay. So that's a unitary transformation that leaves the entanglement entropy invariant, but it also has an interpretation as I just choose this magnetic field in the spin to be in some arbitrary dimension, but then rotate the spin to be parallel to the magnetic field. Okay, so the Hamiltonian is not necessarily invariant. It's just the ground state will be invariant under this transformation. Okay, and then since the second spin does not interact at all with this magnetic field, I can rotate it as I like. Okay. And I choose a unitary transformation that's related to the first one, except that I introduce a parameter lambda, which appears here, which we choose to be between 0 and 1. And that determines the second transformation. So then my total unitary transformation will be the tensor product of these two unitary transformations acting on the two sides. Okay, and then, as I said, we can just solve the Schrödinger equation, which gives us the ground state. It looks like this in a singlet and triplet notation. And alpha is just the constant which has the magnetic field and the coupling constant of our original Hamiltonian. And as I said, the entanglement entropy is not changed when applying the unitary transformation that acts on each of the spins individually. Okay. You can actually calculate it. It looks like this in this case. Now we can calculate the Berry phase for the system, okay? And we can do it in a slightly more mathematical fashion than what I showed before by looking at the so-called Maurer-Cartan form, which is a connection on a group manifold M defined for any group element sigma. Okay, so this is this connection, which I can, sorry. Yeah?
Maybe I missed it. What was the physical definition of the Berry phase?
The physical definition is this one, okay, so it's a gamma is the phase, okay, so and I just get it by integrating around a closed loop in some parameter space. Okay, I choose a path which is spanned, you know, I have a basis that depends on the parameter which depends on time, and then I just evaluate this. But okay, so this is the physical definition, so this means. For instance, the Aharonov-Bohm effect is a very nice example where if you go once around the magnetic field, you get something more trivial because there's an obstruction.
So this effect you just mentioned now, I understand, but here A is not a real gauge field, right? A is an auxiliary.
Yeah. It's just the Berry connection for this particular evolution.
So I think I understand more or less the mathematical definition.
Yeah.
But does it have physical significance, this definition?
Yeah,
is it,
I mean,
measuring some kind of adiabatic change.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, it just, if this is just for one particular spin in the magnetic field. So then if you have a precession, say, of the spin around the magnetic field, then because of the flux, you will pick up a non-trivial phase. And, I mean, this is a very quantum mechanical, I mean, the condensed matter physicists, they calculate these phase in band structures and so on. So it's just a very simple example of picking up a flux if you go around a magnetic field without particle. But now, I mean, okay, so here it's true that now we're going to look at some more generalized definition. Okay. But I mean, the mathematics essentially, so because now the difference with, so this very first example I just showed you was just for a single particle in a magnetic field. Okay, so there's no entanglement because there's only one object. Now we'll have to do something slightly more elaborate because we will have two spins. Okay, and they interact with each other. And so there can be entanglement. Okay, so in this case now, the Berry connection will be the ground state expectation value of this Mauer cutoff one. So okay, it's a different example from the one before was just for one spin. Now we have two spins, and we can define, but I mean, mathematically it's analogous for this unitary transformation that I just defined on the previous slide. I can define this connection. Okay, so the connection will essentially be taking this unitary transformation that I defined before. Okay, but then still again for this model, which I just showed you with the two spins in the with one of them in the magnetic field, I can calculate this, and this is the result. So theta and phi are the angles on the sphere surrounding on which my one of the two spins can lie, and the other and alpha is just a constant which contains the magnetic field and the coupling constant. And lambda is the parameter which I introduce artificially here. Okay.
I'm still a bit lost.
Yeah.
So if I'm an experimentalist, yeah. I have access to the two spins. I can do measurement
yeah,
around
the
other.
Yeah.
What should I do to measure these quantities that you are computing? In other words, your very phase has some function.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
What's
the
physical significance of the zeros, averaging
of this function? Okay. It's just it's a very phase with respect to the magnetic field. You know, you consider one of the two spins rotating around the magnetic field, and but it's interacting at the same time with the other one. And then, so the unitary transformations that we consider here are the ones which leave the entanglement invariant. So there's essentially the U1 transformations here. Okay. So, but I can just calculate what I just showed. And then, so here we can also calculate the so-called Berry curvature, okay? And so the Berry curvature you get from the connection by looking at the exterior derivative of the Mauer Cartan form. So this is called the Kirillov-Kostan symplectic form. And then the Berry phase in this case will be the integral over the entire two-sphere of this connection. And this is the result that we get. Okay. In the simple example. Again, so lambda is a parameter of the unitary transformation. Alpha is fixed by coupling constant and magnetic field. Pi is, okay, is a number and two. Okay, so you can just see if this lambda is different from one, you get something non-trivial here. And so the key point is that this is a Berry phase for two interacting spins of which one is in the magnetic field, but the Berry phase is still with respect to rotations around this planet.
Sorry, I'm sorry for being insisting, but I feel like if I don't understand this, I will be totally lost from the rest. So here we have two spins,
yeah.
And then we define some unitary transformation.
Yes.
Right? So some,
yeah.
Like a gate, right? Some machine that acts
on the state, yeah, on the ground state. Yeah.
We do like on the ground state.
Yeah.
Then it has some parameter there.
Yeah.
This unitary transformation.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then from there, we define stuff, but then it should have a physical meaning. It should be, what is this lambda, an honest time, or is it?
No. Lambda is just a number. So it's just a parameter that I choose. Okay, so it's not the path. The path is defined by theta and phi. Lambda is an external parameter in this case. It's a bit unfortunate, it has the same name as the one I had before. But this lambda is just a number between 0 and 1. Okay. So I choose one of the unitary transformations to be slightly different from the other, which I can. Because the defining principle is that I want the entanglement entropy to be invariant, and if I do it like this, I can show that the entanglement entropy is invariant for any lambda in this range. Okay? And then, so for this unitary transformation, I can define this form, okay? And then for this form, I can define a connection, and then I just integrate it, and I get this number. And so this has a particular name, so it's related to symplectic forms, but okay, so you know, it's just for a given group manifold, which in our case is just the SU2 of the part.
The maybe thing is that you're saying that you have some k that you, but for a given
variation,
yeah.
There's k that you can apply with any. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
So with the difficulty in identifying, I guess, that unitary that you want to transform for a given state, or it's already?
Well, I mean, it's a choice. So, you know, I'm pretty sure it's even the most general choice that I can have for transformations U that satisfy this condition that the entanglement entropy shouldn't change. Okay, so the point is that, okay, so for a different lambda, this phi will be different, but the entanglement entropy will be the same. Okay, so that's the important thing. So, okay, so here's again the result. It's non-trivial as long as this parameter is between 0 and 1, but not exactly 1, because if it's exactly 1, then this vanishes. Okay. And so now again, you can show, so this particular form that you have is not globally exact, okay, because it's proportional to the volume form of S2. And so that's actually the key why you get a non-trivial result when you integrate this. Okay, so the upshot is I have a unitary transformation, and I have a ground state of a Hamiltonian, and the two states have the same entanglement entropy, but they have a different Berry phase in this construction that I just showed. I mean,
you say that just throw pressure to original psi, like some complex magnitude, totally different.
Sorry, can you just repeat it?
They are totally different. Just it's not just different by phase factor, as in the original.
Well, okay, this is the result. Okay, so for this just means for different lambda, I just get a different lambda here. Okay, but for any lambda, I get the same entanglement entropy.
Yeah, but when you're in textbook, you just change the parameter and just go back to your plane.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then it measures only the phase factor, but I'm just asking for psi and u psi are the genuine difference.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I shouldn't have given the first example. Maybe I shouldn't have given it because that's really confusing. The first example, you just have one spin. Okay, that goes around the magnetic field. Here, what I'm doing. I'm integrating over the entire S2. Okay, so it's a slightly different symmetry because I have two spins.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not exact. I mean, the first example was just to give some background information for one spin. Now we're talking about two spins. Okay.
But they are in a different way in the Hilbert space?
That's a very good question. I will talk about Hilbert spaces in 1 minute. Okay. I mean, let me just go further because the Hilbert spaces. Okay, very good. Okay, so that's just the next thing I wanted to say. Okay, there's some mathematics here which we can later recover actually for the wormhole. Okay. Okay, so the projective, so the Hilbert space is SU4 of this thing, if you just have two spins. And then if you look at the so-called projective Hilbert space of pure states, that's CP3, which is SU4 mod U3. Okay. Okay, so if we had two single qubits that didn't talk to each other, so if the interaction were zero, then I would have CP1 for one spin and CP1 for the other. Okay, so just we want to talk about wormholes later. Okay, so it will be very similar there. I mean, so it's like the two CFTs that don't talk to each other in the factorization puzzle. Okay. So of course, if they don't talk to each other, if they don't interact, then actually entanglement entropy is going to vanish. And then the ground state of the entire system will lie in this factored subspace, okay? and then describes local properties. So then we have a factored space for this ground, but the ground set lies in the factorized part of the entire projective Hilbert space. Now, if we have maximal entanglement, then we can actually show that the states will be in a non-diagonally embedded some manifold of CP3. Okay, or said in other mathematical terms, maximally entangled orbit is a so-called Lagrangian submanifold. But okay, so essentially what's happening, and this is very important because this is exactly the same that I'm going to show you for the wormholes in a few slides. Okay, so that might ask why am I talking about quantum mechanics for such a long time. This is exactly what we're going to see for the wormhole. So before switching on the interactions, I have two spins, and each of them has a CP1 Hilbert space. Okay. And then if I make them interacting and they're maximally entangled, then actually I get a non-factored, by calculating the ground state, I find due to this non-exact symplectic form, which also leads to the Berry phases, I see that now the ground state will be in this non-factorized space. Okay. And that's actually one of the upshots of what I want to show to you, because exactly the same will happen if we look at wormholes. Okay, so we will have a very similar mathematical structure. So there will be different symmetry groups, obviously, but we will get a very similar structure here. Okay, so now very, very quickly. If we really actually want to measure this in the lab, so it would be to have two spins that interact with each other, and so they will have different Berry phase, but the same entanglement. Okay, so that's what you want to see in the experiment. And so then you have to reconstruct the entire density matrix. And this can be done by reconstructing the quantum states using measurements on an ensemble of identical quantum states. So there's a review article of how to do this for trapped ions. And so in particular, you can actually measure the tensor product of Pauli matrices, and that allows to reconstruct the phase, the quantum mechanical phase between two states. So now we have two different, so this is the quantum mechanical phase between the, in the entangled state, but then there's, of course, this is not the Berry phase. The Berry phase is with respect to the magnetic field. Okay. So then you would have to measure the Berry phase with respect to the magnetic field, and at the same time, which so this file will be related to actually this unitary transformation, okay, and so the idea would be to measure both and show that for different phases phi, the entanglement entropy is the same, but the Berry phase will be different. Okay, I've already spent a lot of time, so let me not spend too much time, but there were some suggestions in which, in our paper, for which systems you can actually do. But okay, maybe I should move on to the black holes. Okay. Okay. Now, first, let's go one dimension higher, okay, and look at Berry phases in two-dimensional CFTs. Now the symmetries, okay, so this the upshot will be that this factorized structure arises exactly the same way as I was explaining, but of course now we are talking about different symmetries, okay, because now we have conformal field theories and there will be Virasoro algebras. Okay, so let me just recall some very basic facts about two-dimensional CFTs. So we have the Virasoro group, which we can write as the diffeomorphism of S1. And there will be group elements which contain a function of the angle phi of your S1, and alpha is essentially the central charge. And then we have the energy momentum tensor, which you can expand in the usual generators, and which lead to the Virasoro algebra. And so then we can construct highest weight states that I call H, sorry. And then you see that you can first of all consider CFT vacuum, which is invariant and then SL2R symmetry. While if you have a general state H, highest weight state H, then this will just have a U1 symmetry. Okay, so the SL2R will be broken. And
okay, then we have a left and a right moving sector, which for the vacuum state, you can, so this is the left and the right moving sector, and for the highest wave state of some excited state, you can also write in this product form, but with a reduced symmetry here. And so now let's go to the gravity dual. So, and probably as you know, we can now write the metric of the dual ADS space using the standard Pfefferman-Gram metric, as you can find in those papers. And but in ADS3, actually this expansion, this Pfefferman-Gram expansion, it looks a lot more simple than in other cases. So, so we have an expectation value of the energy momentum tensor in the particular state that we are considering. This is your Pfefferman-Gram expansion, and you can actually show that in ADS3 it terminates here. There will not be higher order terms. Okay, and then you can actually calculate the higher order terms in the expansion, and they will actually look like this. Okay, and so the symmetries of the expectation value of the energy momentum tensor becomes a killing symmetry of the bulk. Okay, and in the vacuum state, we just have minus C over 24 here. And then we get the full SO2R symmetry. Okay, so now I need to introduce another mathematical concept that we're going to use to write these Berry phases. Okay, let me say that now there will be some complicated stuff, but the idea will be exactly analogous to what I've done in this quantum mechanical system, just with other symmetries. Okay, so we take some space in with some states, and then on which we call gates, and then we act with a Virasoro group element, and so then this is the adjoint transformation that you're familiar with, and then if we have this, then we can construct a so-called co-adjoint transformation acting on the state V, which is just obtained from this by the conjugation in this way. So now an important concept that we're going to use is the so-called co-adjoint orbit. So this means that this is a set of states V, which is reached, so states are in a space in which the Virasoro group acts. And so these states will be reachable through co-adjoint transformations on a fixed state V naught. Okay, so this is here. So we take some representative, which is the state V naught, and so then we act with this co-adjoint transformation, and that gives us another state for elements of the Virasoro group. Okay, and so you can actually show if you do this for the Virasoro group, then this co-adjoint orbit, so defined by this, will actually be a Verma module. Okay, and now for these co-adjoint orbits, there's also a natural way in which such a symplectic form arises about which I've been talking about. And it's written here. Okay. And then we can define a so-called geometric action. So in the sense of Hamiltonian action, where we just integrate over this alpha here. And then just inserting everything, this geometric action looks like this. And okay, so now just again looking at the Virasoro group, then this orbit will look like this. And this transformation, this adjoint transformation for a representative V0, will take this form here with this being the Schwarzschild derivative. So that's just giving the explicit expression for saying that you pick a representative in of the states, and then you apply this adjoint conjugate transformations, this one, and then you obtain the so-called orbit. And for this, you can write an action just from using the symplectic. Okay, so and there's a very nice paper by Omlak from 2017. Where he actually defines a Berry phase for the Virasoro group. Okay. And so, in fact, it's generated by diffeomorphisms that change the CFT state. And now it looks very similar to this Maurer-Cotton form that I was using for the quantum mechanical case. So the Berry phase for the group manifold is constructed from a particular form, which is defined like this. So this is a derivative, and then you consider just a state giving a particular angle of the S1, which depends on time. And then again, you can write this in terms of a unitary transformation. Okay. Now, it's a little more tricky because you have to include the central extension. Okay, so that's the difference, of course, between these, because there's always the central term in the Virasoro algebra that you have to take care of. But okay, the only point I want to make, I mean, this mathematical structure works exactly the same as the quantum mechanical case, except now it works, we're working with the Virasoro group.
Sorry, I think I'm really totally lost. So I have some simple CFT, like Dyson model.
Yeah.
And now what am I doing physically to compute the, what physical thing I'm doing to compute this Berry phase? Am I changing the parameters in the CFT? What exactly?
Well, I mean, here, you just go, the corners are phi is the angle and t is time. Okay, so in that sense, Sorry, I didn't hear you.
No, let me answer this question.
Yeah.
The question. Okay, so maybe my take,
this
might be very nice. So I thought, the first step you're talking about some two-qubit system and how you can have an entanglement entropy or also Here you're trying to make the analogy that those two qubits are now your left and right,
So far there's no entanglement and I'm just talking about one single CFT. Very good, but you're about three slides ahead now. Okay, so at the moment in this paper by Ulvlag, he just defines Berry phases for the Virasoro group for one CFT.
The same way that you did it for the two qubits and for this and wormhole, like ending.
Yeah, this will be in three slides. I'm going to talk about two CFTs.
Will the goal be to try to, like, in the analog, what was the goal from the point of view of the two qubit system? You're trying to actually find the, like completely determine the state from a number of different, like you have entanglement entropy and you have Berry phase, or I guess.
Yes, exactly. Okay, I think, let me just go on for one more slide and I will explain this. Okay, so at the moment, T is time, so I and T are the coordinates, and I just using time, I move around the circle of the on which the different morphisms are defined for the Virasoro group, okay? And then, this amounts to a unitary transformation, and so I can just define this object, okay? Which is the, it's a state, it's a scalar product, and I just have an exterior derivative with respect to this time coordinate, okay? It's a bit abstract, okay? So I'm just essentially moving in the group manifold. If you want, I'm moving around the circle on which the Virasoro group acts. I think that's probably the best I can answer your question, okay? And so there's no entanglement so far. I haven't mentioned entanglement anywhere. I just have one single CFT, and I'm just talking about the geometry, okay? So this is what is in this paper. So I defined this.
You start with the state into 2D CFT.
Yes.
You do a sequence of Virasoro transformations.
Yes. Yes.
Such that you come back to
the
original parameterization. The original state up to a phase.
Well, yes. Yes, exactly. So that's what this picture shows. Okay. So this rectangle means this is one of these orbits. Okay. So I pick a representative in this orbit, and then if I act with these transformations, I return to the same. And then in that case, the Berry phase is zero because I just return to exactly the same way I started with. However, if I pick a state which is outside this orbit and apply this transformation which generates my trajectory, then I will pick up a phase. Okay. But it's exactly what you just said. This is correct. Okay, so I have to. So this is this orbit. Okay, so I'm acting with this diffeomorphism and essentially go around the circle. But if I really move just in this orbit, then nothing happens. But if I start with a B0 which is not in this orbit and apply exactly the same transformation which is used here, this F, okay, then I pick up a phase. Okay. And now we can again look at the holographic version of this. Okay. Maybe that's some little repetition of what I said before. And okay, so in the CFT, you can actually, this orbit is defined by the highest weight state and the central charge. Okay, so now the idea is that we want to find the gravity dual of this story. Okay, so instead of just moving in the group manifold of conformal transformations, or rather moving on the circle with diffeomorphisms, okay, then now we look at the dual bulk geometries which are associated to these Virasoro co-adjoint orbits, and these are precisely the so-called Barnardo's geometries. And here you see an action for this. So it's an onshore solution to ADS3 gravity with the Brownian boundary conditions that are well known. Okay, but this was just to mention for completeness that there is a definite bulk dual of these co-adjoint orbits. Okay, so far there was no entanglement. We just looked at one CFT, but now we make another step on top of this, which is exactly what you were saying. So now we want to use this formalism to describe what happens if I have two CFTs, each of the, coming back to the geometry that I was discussing at the beginning. Okay, so at the beginning I was discussing this geometry, so we have one CFT here, one CFT there, and there's an eternal black hole in the middle. Okay.
Both stabilizing progressing on tour and U1, both considering both if S and less on tour and also U1.
CFT. Sorry, I really acoustically didn't understand what you were saying. Can you just.
So you're considering CFT corresponding to both, like, the stabilizer group is in the case of SL tour or U1?
Yes. Yes.
The case of SL tour, this is like, same as, like, this Kostler and Jensen, Alex. Alexey Chatashev connection, right?
I'm not exactly sure which model you mean. But maybe, can we talk about this afterwards? Maybe then I would like to know what you're saying, but
in the case of like JT, there is a like interpretation is there is a defect in the ball.
Yeah. Okay. Are you talking? Yes. Okay. I will talk about JT gravity in a few slides. Okay. Just hang on for a sec. Okay. Let me just finish this. Okay. So far, we were just talking about one CFT, and we defined a very phase with respect to this Virasoro symmetry. So now we move on, and we look at this very nice paper by these authors. And okay. So again, we go back to our ADS geometry. And then, in fact, okay, so if we look at ADS3, this corresponds to a wormhole geometry where I have a left and a right-hand side. Okay, now I turn my wormhole around, and I look from one side. Okay, so now the outer circle is the one end of the wormhole, and I'm looking towards the other end, which is the other end of the wormhole. Okay, so it's the same as there. I just turned this by 90 degrees. Okay. Okay, and now you can define a holonomy. You can just go around the circle. Okay, and now we take a very simple example. There's no ADS CFT yet because we just take a U1 Trans-Siemens action, but we are free to consider a U1 Trans-Siemens action in this ADS3 geometry with this action. Okay, and then there will be a holonomy because if you take this gauge field, which is in this action, and you go once around the other end of the wormhole, then you pick up space. Okay. Now, if you have a Terman-Stein's action in a three-dimensional space with boundaries, then it can actually be shown. So that's a result about Trans-Siemens theories that you can talk also about the boundary degrees. You can equivalently formulate this action in terms of the boundary degrees of freedom because it's non-dynamical. So in the Abelian case, this phi component. So there's, I mean, it's three dimensions. So we have T, phi, and R. And in the abelian case, so we have a particular scalar function mu. And so then we can define capital phi and capital psi to be the boundary values of this particular field. Okay. And now I can trade this action for two actions at the boundaries, so on fact at here and there, essentially. But this is, of course, not the action of the CFT. It's more an action for the couplings of the CFT. Okay, it's a dual action which I get from the gravity. Okay, and never mind exactly what this action looks like. I have some kinetic term for the field phi on the left-hand side. I have some kinetic term for the field psi on the right-hand side. But then the important thing is that I will get a contribution from the holonomy, which actually couples the two sides. Okay, and that's where the non-factorization is going to come from. So the upshot is that the non-factorization can be traced back to this geometrical property of having this holonomy. Okay, never mind the details. It's just we have one action for the left and one action to the right, but then there's a common term which involves this holonomy, which is only defined by the bulk. Okay, and now again, I'm just saying this complicated formalism that I'm trying to advocate, you can exactly apply it to this case again. Okay, so we can again look at a symplectic form on the phase space, just as I was mentioned at the very beginning of the talk. Okay. And so we have a conjugate momentum for this holonomy, which looks like this. Okay, so there's some element of a Wilson line there involved in P1. And then you have a symplectic form on the boundary phase space, which is spanned by the fields phi and psi, so for left and right, their conjugate momenta, the holonomy, and its conjugate momentum. Okay, so and then you get this symplectic form. And then you can again show that this form will be non-exact due to the presence of this holonomy. And so a group theoretically, we have exactly the same as I was advocating for the simple quantum mechanical models, just with different symmetries. Okay. So now on the left-hand side, so LG just means a Kac-Moody algebra for this D1 symmetry that we have. And so essentially, due to this holonomy, they get coupled, and so it's only the product of the left and right gets jointly favored over the symmetry group that I'm considering at the beginning and not separately. Okay. Yeah.
So in the Ehrenkopf-Lippert story, are these two sides still like their entanglement entropy is not trivial, or is it trivial and the only thing is the holonomy here that's like
indicating? No. The entanglement. So in this case, now the entanglement entropy will be non-trivial. And okay, so the entanglement entropy will be non-trivial, and the non-factorization comes in precisely this group theoretical way, which is very analogous to what I was discussing in the simple quantum mechanical model. That's why I was mentioning. Okay. All right. Okay, it's nice to, I try to finish in 5 minutes if that's okay. Okay, so now I just showed you a simple case where this is just a U1 theory. And now comes, I think that's what you were asking, we can now redo the whole thing for conformal symmetry at the two sides. So, and then, okay, then we have a non-abelian SL2R times SL2R symmetry. And so, this result of Oblak I showed was just the Berry phase for one CFT, but now we look at this Berry phase for two coupled theories. Okay? And so again, it's important to note the symmetry transformation actually changed the states in the CFT, and the symplectic form. Okay, so that's a big sentence that is important. So let me go slowly. So the symplectic form in the phase space can be mapped to the symplectic form on the Virasoro group manifold with a coupling between both CFTs. So that's the upshot of this paper. Okay. So essentially, we have, so this is the one Virasoro group for the one CFT, and that's the Virasoro group for the other CFT. And then now, because the symplectic form in the bulk is not exact, we get this non-factored space again, which will be associated with a non-zero Berry phase, and also, of course, the two sides of the black hole will be entangled. Okay. Right. Maybe I should skip many technical details, but okay. So essentially, now we can write this geometric action that I introduced. Okay. So let me just recall what this was. Okay. So this is the geometric action for one CFT. But now I want to show to you what happens if we have two CFTs on each side of the black hole, and how are they now coupled via this holonomy. So now I can write one geometric action on the left-hand side and one geometric action on the right-hand side, and this orbit will be play an important role. And remember that there's one state in the space on which the Virasoro group acts, which defines this orbit. Okay, and that's given by this V0 here. Okay. Now, if I do this for the two couple theories, and I can show that the effect of this holonomy is that I will have two of these geometric actions, one of the left-hand side and one on the right-hand side, and then they come with a minus sign, just the way we constructed things. But the upshot is that this coupling via this non-trivial holonomy implies that this orbit element has to be the same on the both sides. Okay, so in fact, the Berry phases of the left and right side will be coupled due to the fact that I have to this whole entire holonomy construction, which I showed to you, implies that this representative of the orbit has to be the same, and this element will be related to the holonomy. And what's this even more, which I didn't write, is that this holonomy will be related to the mass of the black hole. Okay, and I think that somebody asked about this defect operators. So that's where this, I think, comes in, because the mass of the black hole gives rise to the holonomy. The holonomy enters the orbit representative. And the upshot of this entire construction is that the two geometric action on the two sides will be linked because they have the same orbit representative. Okay, and all right, so essentially this, again, so this is the important group theory structure that I want to advocate, which helps us for the quantum mechanical models, but also now in for the two coupled sides. Okay, so we have, I try to finish soon because we already went for quite some time. So far I talked about Berry phases for Virasoro symmetry, but we can also define Berry phases for a gauge symmetry at the boundary, okay, in the sense of Brown and Mu, okay, and so that will be correspond to looking at proper diffeomorphisms, okay, and here now I think I can go back. First one dimension to make things simple, and it's really in, so this would be ADS2 space, and I can compare directly to the quantum mechanical model, although it's of course not exactly the same because here the boundary theories will be strongly coupled. Okay. And so again, it's a Berry phase for a different symmetry, it's just for a U1 symmetry, but essentially it's the absence of a global Killing vector if in this wormhole geometry, which leads to a non-exact symplectic form. But then I have a particular symmetry at the boundaries. So if I go back to this famous picture of ER's EPR, and I have a TFD state here, if I evolve it with the sum of the two Hamiltonians left and right, okay, so then I get a non-trivial physical process. While if I involve it with the difference, then I have just a symmetry which does not transform the state. Okay, and now I can actually calculate this Berry phase for the TFD state itself. And so, and then again, so Berry connections can be defined for symmetries. Okay, so if I construct the Berry connection for a diffeomorphism which corresponds to this time evolution, then I get a non zero contribution to the Berry connection in the Berry phase. But for the diffeomorphisms which preserve the symmetry, okay, so for this difference, then the Berry phase just vanishes. Okay, it's just a symmetry. And because somebody asked about JT gravity, so we can also calculate this for JT in the bulk, no? Okay. And again, so that, as shown in this famous paper, the diffeomorphisms are given by time translations with the particular, so the horizon value of this JT field. And here, IB entering here as well on the two sides. And so you can actually also calculate the Berry phase in the scenario there. And again, because of this non-exact symplectic form, in fact, here you get a phase of 2 pi. And here it has a, so because of the U1 symmetry that you're considering here, it has a winding number interpretation. OK, so you can also do this for JT gravity. All right, okay, I think I'm out of time, but let me just very quickly say that, so the reason we are interested in this, because now there's connections to this von Neumann algebras, which you may have heard about in these recent famous papers, and okay, I'm out of time, so let me basically say that it's these von Neumann algebras are a concept of algebraic quantum field theory, and they are used to classify operator algebras with respect to entanglement properties. Okay. And so as you can read in these papers and the reviews they cite, there are three types of these operator algebras. So type one is what you normally have in quantum mechanics, where you have a density matrix and a well-defined trace, where you have a well-defined entanglement entropy, similar to the examples I showed at the beginning. And then there's a type two, of these algebras where there is a trace prescription. So in principle, you can define an entanglement entropy, but it's not entirely unambiguous because it does not act irreducibly. Okay, so in fact, essentially here, you can calculate differences between entanglement entropies. And then there's something called type three, where there's no trace prescription. So this is actually applies to most examples of quantum field theories. And so the entanglement entropy is, you always need a cutoff to define the entanglement entropy. Okay. Now, the symmetry that we were just talking about in the JT case, which is generated by the left Hamiltonian minus the right Hamiltonian, so that actually corresponds to a particular transformation, which turns out to be an automorphism. And so that has been discussed in this paper to show that it generates type two from this type three from Neumann algebra. Now for black holes, it would be nice to have this type two, because then we can define entanglement entropies. We can make exactly this relation again between geometry and entanglement. So most of the cases that are at hand when you talk about quantum field theories are type three. So it's nice to have a way from getting from here to there. And so what connects the entire story that I've been talking about to this is that there are symmetries that give you a particular, so an automorphism means it's an operator which is outside the operator algebra. So because the Hamiltonian, so this is a large N limit, so where the Hamiltonian is not scaling fast enough with N. And so it's a transformation that's outside the algebra, but if it acts on the algebra, it maps the algebra to itself. That's why it's called auto-automorphism. And as shown in these papers, such a transformation gives you a type two where you can actually define entanglement entropy from the type three von Neumann algebras. And so the entire scenario that I've been talking about, especially for this JT example at the end, could be a starting point of making this much more precise and making relations to entanglement entropy, as I was explaining before. Okay, so that's something you're looking at. Okay, I have a final example, but I think in the view of time, I'm going to skip. I mean, there's yet another type of Berry phase that people have considered as the so-called modular Berry phase. And again, it has been looked at by Bartek-Czech and collaborators for one CFT, and the new thing that we did was to look at two coupled CFTs. Okay. But okay, let me skip this example for now and just show the conclusions. So what we can show using all these techniques is that the non-factorization of the wormhole Hilbert space is due to a non-exact symplectic form, and and that results in a non-zero Berry phase. And so I showed you that this mathematical structure is present both in quantum mechanics but also in conformal theories. And it gives some more mathematical background for this nice relation between entanglement and geometry. So I mentioned that there's possibilities of actually making quantum mechanical experiments that show this these features. And then on the mathematical side, there's this interesting relation to the von Neumann algebras. Okay, and that's all I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Any other questions during the talk? Everybody seems completely exhausted.
Yeah, in the
you made a particular case to like look at different transformations that change the entanglement entropy. I guess
yeah. In
this case, like the very face coming from the Virasoro symmetry is also yeah. supposed to have that same feature or
Right, okay, so there I was. So in the case of the very faces, so there were two aspects to the story. Okay, so there's one aspect, which I discussed in the quantum mechanical model, that even if states have the same entanglement entropy, they can have a different very phase. And then the next step was that this very phase is related to a non-exact symplectic form. And the next step was that this non-exact symplectic form leads to a non-factored structure of the Hilbert space.
The thing is that maybe I was thinking about that yeah. like the ER equals EPR, like the entanglement entropy side of the thing, and that the first part of the talk was talking about a very phase is independent of that, and then at the end you're basically saying the very phase is a signal of this
Yeah, the very phase is a fact of signaling this non-factorization. Yeah, so it's a mathematical tool to quantify the non-factorization. Yeah, that's the whole point. And so we always saw this group theoretical structure describing the Hilbert space, where we first had one group acting on the left and one group acting on the right. And then when either the quantum mechanical interaction was switched on, or when we put this black wormhole in the middle where there was this holonomy, this leads to a non-factored space, which is always a product group divided or quotiented by the residual symmetry that's left. So, and this is a nice feature that appears in many of these examples, and it's a nice way to quantify the non-factorization. Yeah?
Can you say something about like what would be the CFT interpretation? Like if I just take two CFT and
yeah.
entangle them,
yeah.
and I'm not trying to look at holography, like how do I see these very phases, or how do I see this breaking of factorization because there's no interactions?
Yeah, okay, so if they're entangled, it would mean that the states again lies in a non-factorized subspace of the entire Hilbert space geometry. So I mean, the statement is that if you have something which is entangled, then you have the left CFT and the right CFT, and then you look at the Hilbert space of this combined setup, okay, which is a big Hilbert space, and then you can show that essentially the entangled ground state will be in a subspace which is non-factorized in this entire big Hilbert space.
So you mean that you measure that you try to measure the operator that is proportional to the holonomy and to the 2D. And so you would expect the Hilbert spaces to
find. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, are they entangled already? I mean, this is a good question. Yeah.
Three CFTs, and then like whatever corresponds to wormhole geometry.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you need some kind of interaction or connection between the two. I mean, otherwise, they will just not talk to each other. But then I think they're also not entangled.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about the higher dimensions.
Yeah.
Better, like, what the conditions are under which you have these non-trivial value spaces. So, for example, the higher dimensional conformal.
Yeah.
You need to have some kind of stress.
Well, I mean, the idea is always to have this non, I mean, the signal of the non-factorization is this non-exact symplectic form. So and it always, I mean, the original way of defining is to look at the phase space of your theory.
But that's more
yeah.
Important,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
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 If you could just start handing that. Like, what is, again, the relationship between the, sorry, probably I
yeah.
misunderstood, but the relationship between this non-exact symplectic form and
Well, okay, I mean, the reason that we looked at the low-dimensional case is because the things is easier to do. Okay, I mean, so if you ask me how to do this in general dimensions, probably not so easy. Okay, I'm not sure, but I mean, you know, I mean, you already saw that in the quantum mechanical case, it was quite different from the CFT case. But I mean, it's always good if you have some kind of symmetry for which you can define. I mean, here, okay, so for the CFT in two dimensions, we were able to do this orbit construction. Now, if you do this in higher dimensions, I'm not exactly sure what the equivalent of that would be. I mean, you have to, I mean, here we just showed a manifestation of this non-factorization of the Hilbert spaces that these two geometric actions are coupled. If you do this in higher dimensional spaces, I'm not, I mean, and but that again reflects the fact that there is a non-exact symplectic form. If you go to higher dimensions, okay, then again the task would be to reflect that somehow that there is this non-exact symplectic form, but how this form is realized in terms of the field theory degrees of freedom, I think that's a tough question. I mean, okay, you need some symmetry, otherwise there's nowhere to start. But okay, I'm sure, I mean, most CFT, you can consider a higher dimensional CFT, but then I'm not exactly sure how you would see this.
Yeah. I just wondered if any. Yeah. Probably also different,
but yeah. You don't necessarily have, I mean, in the quantum mechanical models, it was not CFTs either. I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm sure you can do this in other scenarios. Yeah, sure. Yeah. All right.
If not, we can always bother.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.